Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, a co-host, and with me today will be David Hulley and Mike Gregg. In this episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham at Carroll Road against Norwich City. To help us with that preview, we have James Kent joining us later on, who is a supporter of Norwich City. He's also a blogger as well. I also will be playing an interview I did yesterday with the Fulham manager, Kit Simons, and look forward to sharing that with everyone. Lastly, we will have several other Fulham-related topics to debate on during this show, which I plan on being 90 minutes, but it could be a little bit longer, so I've opened it up for 2 hours. We'll see how long that takes us. As you can probably tell, we do have a full show. Before we get going, I have to bring on my co-host first there. David, how you doing, my friend?
Hello there, Russ. Or should I be saying, greetings, Mr. Goldman. I've been expecting you.
I am doing well, David. Are you excited to do this show today? Just so you know, we have added a guest. James Kent will be joining us. He's been on the show before. It's going to help us preview the match. So we'll be playing the Kit interview. I'll be talking to you guys about several topics. It should be a fun show.
Now, I'm looking forward to the, obviously, with us playing Norwich, I mean, plenty of opportunities for me to be silly as well. But end of season, sort of, you know, last day of school demob time almost, isn't it, you know? So let's hope we have a fun show after. You know, it's been a pretty miserable season, to be honest with you. But, you know, we've ended with a relative high of, you know, a small unbeaten run and 2 wins back-to-back. Can we make it 3? I doubt it, but who knows what might happen. We could end with three straight wins. You never know.
You never know, David. We'll definitely get to Norwich City later on. And before we go any further, I have to welcome our other co-host to the show. Mike, how you doing, my friend?
Hi, Ross. I'm good. And hi to David as well.
Hello.
I thought his impressions with him, and being last day at school, I bought all the board games as well on Subute Games.
How was your holiday?
Yeah, it was very good. It was nice to get away to Spain for a week and then come back to lots of emails in the inbox, which takes a week to sort out. But, yeah, it was good. A good week away. Just I picked the wrong game to miss. The last game of the season, probably the best game of the season.
It was a very interesting match that you missed. But that's okay, Mike. You've seen your share of matches. We're actually going to be talking about one in a little bit that might make up for that. And I'll leave that to your imagination what match I'm talking about. You probably have a good idea, but we will be talking about that. I have a bonus topic that I'll be throwing at you guys in just a few minutes. But before we do that, let's get into Cottage Talk Quick Shots. David, I'm going to start with you. This week, there was an article in West London entitled, Fulham boss fearful club could end up like QPR if he overspent in transfer market. Now, I don't know if you've read the article. I've read the article. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, there's not much chance at the moment because his spending has been pretty minimal, hasn't it? You know, a lot of people were moaning in the transfer window in January that we should have been spending. I remember Stuart saying we had to spend while we had the money because of the FFP rules, and we didn't
right.
do it. So we're a long way from QPR at the moment, I think, in spending terms. It would be very difficult to get to where they've been, really, I think. We could spend considerably more than we have been doing without doing that, but nevertheless, you know, we have to be watchful of these things. But you know, the opposite side of it, and I know Mike will be agreeing with me on this one, is that it's ridiculous when the majority of your team are loan players. It's a terrible scenario. We might as well go back to re-sign Hangeland and Sidwell and Schwartz and everyone else, and have at least our own players who are 50 years old and have, you know, people in and out every 5 minutes on loan who don't have a commitment or a long-term future at the club. So we certainly got to go out and sign. And as I say, we don't really know what's going to happen because, you know, dreadfully, for a lot of people, Kit Simon seems more secure in his job this week than he did last week. But we don't know exactly what will happen. If he is going to go, they need to get rid of him quick. And then we can start working out who's coming in and who's going to be keeping who, get rid of who, or whatever. Because at the moment, it's just so many balls in the air, we don't know whether we're coming or going, really.
Listen, there are a ton of balls in the air. you know, or will be shortly right after this match happens on Saturday, David. You know, again, I'm expecting a huge amount of things to be going on. I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but I'm expecting a good amount of movement, a lot of comings, a lot of goings. I do think that's going to happen. Mike, over to you. When I saw this article, I thought of you right away because I know how mindful you are of the finances. So what did you think about when you read this?
I think, you know, it's a sensible thing. It's going to be the message coming from Kit, from the board, the chairman, whoever manager is. It's going to be sensible. We will have to spend during the summer. And the fans have to, you know, realise the situation as well, which is one of the reasons I did those finance articles, is to give people an understanding is that we can't just go out and spend £30 million in the summer buying, you know, seven or eight players. I fully expect what's going to happen in the summer is we will sell a player for a decent amount of money, one of the youngsters probably, and that money will be, you know, recycled into purchasing people. And, you know, the fans, it's important that the fans, you know, we all want a new player. We want a big signing. But let's be honest, what we want is a team. And it's okay going and spending all that money on McCormick. And he's done great come the end of the season, and that's fine. If you're going to spend $11 million, then you need to be spending five and six on other players, not picking up freebies and ones and $2 million players. So it's about getting the right balance of players who are going to excite the fans and get them to get the season tickets, and then also who's right for the team. But I think it's important that the club put down some early signposts that, you know, this is what we're going to do. We're buying players. We're signing these players ready for the 1st of July. And to get the fans up and excited and, you know, behind whoever is in charge, be it Kit, be it someone else. And but be sensible as well. But it's going to be an interesting one if QPR get relegated, because QPR are the bad boys. They're the ones who have a big fine over their head. And the Football League need to act if QPR get relegated. So it's going to be an interesting summer all round for QPR if they come down, and then also the knock-on effect that has with other Football League clubs.
Listen, what's happening with them is going to be very interesting. I'm glad that you brought that up. But going back to your thoughts about spending money, I couldn't agree with you more, Mike. It's how you're going to spend the money. I think that they need to be sensible, but they need to be building a team. They need to find the right players, and they got to spend their money wisely. But I'm certainly not against a high-profile player or two. It just has to be the right players. But you need to be not just spending it all in one place. I think that was your point, Mike. You know, again, you spent all this money on Ross McCormack, which is great, but then you follow that up by all these other loan players and low budget deals. You know, again, if you're going to do that, you have to follow that up with something else. You know, not just one big signing and nothing behind it. It doesn't have to be three big signings. It could be one big signing and maybe a few sensible signings to go with that. Complementary pieces, you know, if you understand where I'm going, Mike. But I do agree with you that it's going to come down to, Mike, how Fulham spend their money.
Yeah, I mean, I think their net spend, we could probably spend about 10 to 15 net, but I don't think we'll go that high. But I'm just the sort of mindset, if we've got, say, a £15 million budget, then we should be looking to buy, you know, four or five players. We need five first teamers, and that needs to be the target at least. Five starters for the team, because, you know, that's what we're going to need to turn the results around, you know, 480-degree turn in the results that we've had this year. You know, we've lost 20 games. We need to change that to just 10. And win the other 10 to get anywhere near playoffs. So it's going to need a massive amount of work during the summer. And from what you gather and what you read is that they're already working on it, which is good news. And I hope we're not going to be another deadline day at the end of August, already four games into the season, playing catch-up, trying to find players who are going to push us on.
You know, something tells me, Mike, that things are going to happen faster than they have in the past. I just get that feeling. Again, I'll be sharing the interview I did with Kit, and I, you know, again, I'm reading between the lines, but I just got a feeling that they're at work at it probably even now, maybe not him, but maybe other people behind the scenes, getting things ready, getting prepared for this, because they need to come out strong, they need to come out fast, and they need to build the squad. Like you mentioned, you know, I'm not against five new players, but possibly five new starters. I'm not against that. But they need to act quicker than they have before and get all their ducks in a row. So when we start training, we're pretty much there, and they have time to build together and build a team. You know, because I don't think the team that we built last summer was a real team. They need to build a team. It's not just about acquiring talent. It's about building a team. The right pieces. They all have to fit. And that's what the manager and Mike Rigg and Shad Khan, that's what their responsibility is. It's about building a team. Make sure all the parts are working together. All right. Guys, let's move on. Mike, I'm going to go right back to you because, again, you did miss the last match, and that was a memorable, very memorable match. But let's go back. Let's go back 5 years because it was 5 years ago on Wednesday that Fulham beat Hamburg at Craven Cottage to move on to the Europa League final. And I put a video on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. I think I watched it personally five times. But I want to just get your thoughts and memories of that match.
To be honest, it's a bit of a blur. My memories from that game are the last, well, from the moment Gira scored, just standing the whole game, you know, we were standing virtually the whole game anyway. But that last 15 minutes just went on forever. I remember my legs were like jelly and shaking, and the crowd was great. It was Juventus was a special game. But those last 15 minutes and the realisation that we were going to get in the final was extra special. And when that final whistle went, you know, relief all round and joy as well. And a lot of fans just stunned that we'd actually done it, that we'd beaten all these teams and we'd got to the final. So, yeah, my actual memories of it are not great, but just that last 15 minutes and the joy. And leaving the ground, I remember one thing I remember is leaving the ground and the ticket information being thrown up on the big screen and no one really noticed it. And they were selling tickets from, I think, 7 o'clock the next morning, and so many people missed out because they didn't realise. But yeah, a great night, and you know, one that led to something we'll probably be talking about in a couple of weeks. And Gira's goal, the TV commentary, you know, when you watch the game back, and it's just brilliant. Just brilliant,
Mike. It is, Mike. And I'm going to go to you now, David, because I want to get your thoughts on it, because I go back to the announcer saying there's a tidal wave on the Thames. Hamburg will host a final. Fulham will play in it. It still makes me have chills all over my body. Just saying it brings back all those memories. What are your memories, David?
Well, I'm lucky that I have the whole thing recorded on my Sky box, so I can watch the whole thing, you know, preview the whole thing, all the preamble, the adverts, whatever else was on there, over and over again, post-match discussion, which is partly why I haven't cancelled my contract with Sky completely, because I know that I'll lose it. I'm sure there is a way to get it off my Sky box onto some other media, but I'm not that tech savvy, so I have it there. But obviously, I was at the match, and for me, it usurps the Juventus match just because of just that final whistle and the elation. And I think I was still there for hours afterwards. I can't remember actually going. I mean, we stayed. I don't know what we were doing. We must have driven that night, I think. I must have driven down because I would have never made the train. I got home very, very late that night, and I was up. And I don't think I actually slept at all because I was frightened of missing out on the tickets, because I was definitely there when it came up on the board to say about the tickets going on sale from 7 a.m. And by about 7:30, I had about 50,000 tickets, because everyone that I knew, all my boys and all my friends, said, oh, get my ticket, so we can all sit together. Because they did allow, I think, 6 tickets per season ticket holder, which was a bit generous at the time. And because we had 2 tickets, we was able to buy 12. And a lot of people did that as well. And unfortunately, some people did miss out. In hindsight, the club probably should have restricted the amount of tickets they gave per season ticket holder. But, you know, that night was fantastic. I can remember the key incidents, sort of, obviously, Mladen Petric's goal from ridiculously long way out, really. I don't remember Mike. It hasn't much been made of it, but I'm sure it was Jerome Pinsboateng did a terrible tackle on Gira, but it was 2 foot
yeah.
on the ground. I'm sure it was, and he should have got a red card for it. And he only got a yellow. Obviously, then there was the comeback. You know, Davis's goal, Gira's goal, Van Nistelrooy's miss in the last minute or two, and then we had the Dempsey going up the pitch and beating the goalkeeper to be taken out. Also, almost another red card could have been there, really. And he actually went on and put the ball in the net and got booked for doing so. And then Danny Murphy made a total hash of the free kick and put us under pressure when we could have just seen the game out, just adding to the tension, really. But the elation of the final whistle, I've never heard, you know, such relief and elation and disbelief as well, really. I think that, for me, it is my all-time number one memory, really, for Fulham, I think, at the moment. You know, maybe it's not the best we've ever played or whatever, but in terms of, you know, the whole package that night, really, it was fantastic, absolutely fantastic.
I couldn't agree with you more, David, and, you know, obviously watching it here is not the same as being there, and that's why I'm jealous of the two of you for seeing all these wonderful matches live. You've seen the good, the bad, the ugly, but this was the great, and this was the wonderful, and this match... Again, I still get chills. And, David, you probably can never give up Sky because you need to hold on to that, honestly. You need that memory because that memory is special. And, again, on Wednesday, I just kept thinking about it. I wanted to keep watching it because it just brought me back to that place, brought me back to that moment. And it truly was a wonderful moment. And I just felt for everyone that was there. I wish I was there. I just kept saying, I wish I was there. I'm glad you guys... were able to be there for that moment. And maybe in a few weeks we will talk about the Europa League final. We can still talk about that because, again, you know, Fulham did go to a final, and it'll be 5 years from that, so we can definitely still talk about it. Unfortunately, it ends badly, but we should still talk about the achievement of getting to a final and pushing it all the way to the very end. But this is the match that stands out for me. This is the wonderful match, and I will never forget it to the day I die. All right, guys, let's move on, and let's enter the Cottage Talk Roundtable. We'll call it the Roundtable, not Controversy Roundtable, just Roundtable. A couple of interesting discussions this week that I put on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. And here's the first one, and David, I'm going to start with you. Now, let me preface this, that I've actually had a few people send me links to articles about Ryan Tunnicliffe and Ross McCormack, because that's what we're going to be talking about right now. And I understand that because I was aware of some of the comments, but I still want to talk about this just in general and also exactly what was said. So let's start here. Here's a question I asked everyone on the Facebook page. Why do you think Ryan Tunnicliffe held back running at the very end of the winning goal for Ross McCormack against Middlesbrough? And as Dan Thurgood was nice enough to put on the Facebook page, you know, he gave me the article from FulhamFC.com where it basically talks about, I'm paraphrasing because I unfortunately can't pull, I can pull up the quote here right now. Again, this is a quote from McCormack. But I didn't have any power left in my legs, said McCormack. I was struggling. I've been playing with a bit of a knee injury the last 6 or 7 weeks. It's pretty sore. When I was running through one-on-one, Tunnicliffe was on my right side. So I was saying, you come up and I'll square it. You get your first goal. But he was like, no, no, no. He was shouting away while I'm running. You get your hat trick. So that was nice of him. But like I say, I was just pleased with the win. And that's from the article called Hat Trick Delight. But I wanted to talk about this just overall about Tunnicliffe and McCormack and this whole situation because I've seen so much talk about it. So, David, what are your thoughts about this? Again, he stops running. Apparently, Ross McCormack says... You know, again, it was for him so he could get the hat trick. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, Ross told me much the same thing when I spoke to him after the game because I said to him about thought we were going to mess it up, and he said he couldn't shoot from the halfway line. He said his legs had gone; they were like jelly. He said to me. But what happened, obviously, was Tunnicliffe was, you know, he said to Tunnicliffe, "Have it for a hat trick," and Tunnicliffe said, "No, not for a hat trick. Have it for your first goal." And Tunnicliffe said, no, get your hat trick. And Tunnicliffe, as you see, he just stopped running, basically.
Just stopped, right.
You know, so he's kind of made the decision for McCormack really anyway there, that he's put into a situation where he has to score himself. And I don't know, maybe it was a confidence thing as well. Maybe, you know, he thought he's got a better chance of finishing than I have. It was, you know, a lot of pressure, I suppose, really, in there to get the winning goal in the last minute. And he wouldn't, you know, want to be missing that either. So, you know, maybe it's, he went for his experience, I don't know. But yeah, I know he, McCormack told me that his legs had gone and that he's been carrying this injury a bit. And he had to just keep running with it rather than, he had no power to shoot from distance. So, yeah, I mean, it's, at the end of the day, for me, and I'm sure for Mike and for yourself, we don't really care who scores as long as somebody scores and we win. You know, I know you like McCormack to score every week, and he only scores when you don't predict it normally. But, you know, we just want to win and score. I mean, I don't really care. I don't care if Brian Ruiz scores a hat-trick every week. You know, if we win the game, that's all that matters. It's a team game, after all. It's not about the individual.
Of course it is. It's a team game. And I just found this interesting. That's why I wanted to talk about it, because he does stop running. And I was aware of some controversy about it, but I also was aware of some of the commentary, but I just wanted to discuss it. I thought it would be interesting because I think that there are several angles here. Like you said, personally, I think it's a selfless move for him to do this, to basically say to his teammate, here, you score, get your hat trick. But then in the back of my mind, and I've heard this too, is it a confidence thing? Maybe he was not feeling good about, you know, again, his chances to score. Then I've heard the situation that maybe it was a fear that he was going to be offside. So, again, that's why I thought we should talk about it and take it from there. All right. Mike, what are your thoughts about this? I'm curious because, again, I'm not really even criticizing Ryan Tunnicliffe because I actually think it was a selfless move. But I was just trying to think of, he stops running. Was it just a selfless move? Was it a confidence thing? Was it a fear of being offside? What, you know, just your gut feeling. What are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, it was interesting because obviously not watching the game live, as you know, either online or at the game. I was just following it by Twitter and then the response afterwards. And I think you've got to take what the players said, and, you know, what McCormack said, if that's what Ryan told him. And you know, fine. But you can look at it two ways. Yeah, it depends. I think if you want to beat Ryan Tunnicliffe with a stick, or you know, give him the benefit of the doubt. If you actually look at the replay again, he covers a lot of ground. He's on the edge of the box. He's bursting forward to help support. So it could be a case of he is shattered by the time he gets level with McCormack. And And so he's saying, yeah, you go on. Because also, let's face it, and David knows, Tunnicliffe has missed, you know, not a lot, but maybe four or five good chances
in the last few months. He has. That's what crept in my mind, that it might be more than just a selfless thing. I do think that doing that for McCormack could definitely be a part of this. But then I started to think, well, maybe it's also a confidence issue.
Yeah, I mean, if I was going to say, having watched it, I think it's a combination of he knows the player's got the ball, the bloke's got two goals already, he's the number one striker, yeah, you go on. If you're going to get that, you go and get it. Partly through fitness, partly through confidence. You know, it's the end of a long, hard game, and he wants to leave it to the number one man. But in the end, the goal was scored, so, the right decision was made, in a way. If he hadn't scored, then I can imagine the abuse Tunnicliffe would have got for not supporting McCormack and, you know, properly and just stopping. But it all ended well, and you can't moan about the final result and the final goal. It was a good goal in the end when you actually watch it, a good individual goal.
But, absolutely.
Yeah, I think Tunnicliffe, he needs to get his shooting boots on and needs to find a goal from somewhere. Who knows? He might get it tomorrow. And because I think he's had an up and down. It's very much a roller coaster season for him, and but he's been picked almost every game since he came back, and he showed signs of what he can offer. And then other games where you think, you know, what are you doing? You're just a waste of space. But I think there's something there that we can work with, and you know, good full season, and someone who, from the first game, you know, gets behind him and backs him for the team, then I think he's going to be a really good player for us next year.
Okay, very interesting take there, Mike. All right, I'm going to read some of the comments because, again, it really comes down to what we're all talking about. Very, very different comments. You know, basically everything that we've discussed so far. I find it interesting. That's why I thought it was, you know, just a good discussion piece. You know, again, I'm not slamming Tunnicliffe here. I'm actually, you know, part of me is like thinking it's like, hey, you're a good guy for what you did, but then I started thinking more about it, like what else is going on here. So that's why I thought I would pose the question, see what other people thought. And Chris Cox actually put down on the Cars Talk Facebook page, I believe he told Ross to get a hat trick, like we talked about. Ben Pandaloid said, week in, week out, McCormack works his socks off for the team. So Ryan probably thought he deserved it. Also, I know who I'd rather want to go one-on-one with a goalkeeper. Okay, Jamie Vade wrote, I think he held back for altruistic reasons as well. If you really wanted to make a case against him, you could say he didn't want the responsibility and gave it to the captain and club top scorer who was on a hat trick and had already scored two goals under penalty pressure. Either way, I think he made the right decision. I imagine he'd like a goal this weekend, though. Jamie, I completely agree with you. Our friend Ben Reed said, very simply, he was knackered. John Mason wrote, may have been unsure if he could have been called offside if Ross had passed it to him. Colm Bugle wrote, obviously told Ross to go and score his hat trick, though. I thought he should have carried on running, even if only to make the keeper think. Okay, some really interesting comments here from the Fulham supporters. And again, I do want to thank Dan Thurgood for putting up that clip of the article so I could read it on air. And Dan, good job, my friend. Tom and Araman wrote, yeah, Ross said he was going to square it to Tunnicliffe, but told Ross to get his hat trick. And Eden Gordon wrote, completely agree with Colm. It's all well and good to encourage Ross to go for a goal, but Tunnicliffe should have kept running and kept himself in position as an option. Ian Walworth wrote, didn't want to get in the way, cause confusion, offside, etc. Ross, I guess, wanted him to have him an option of a pass if defender got back. Okay. Andrew Towner wrote, avoid temptation for offside pass and mess up winning goal. Oh, and he was knackered and couldn't hit a barn door. Okay, and finally our friend Roger Lewis, I don't think he has the confidence to have a scored a match winner. That is why he waved McCormack on. Interesting point there, Roger. Again, very good thoughts from all the Fulham supporters and you guys as well. That's why I just definitely wanted to talk about that. All right, guys, now let's move on to my second topic, which, again, I find interesting. We've talked about this a little bit, but now it's the end of the season. I really want to get into this because I want to talk about the future. I want to talk about five players you feel Fulham should build around for next season and the future. I put it up on the Cars Talk Facebook page, but, Mike, I'm going to start with you. Name your five players.
Yeah, I had a bit of difficulty with this one because I think we need five players anyway, five starters to supplement the team, you know, for next year. Because although I feel we have a good group of players, we need some better quality in there somewhere. But obviously McCormack is key. We need to, you know, you see some rumours that he doesn't want to stay and wants to move on and... But it needs to be sold to him that he's the number one striker, and striker being the key word, and you know, being the main man, and the other players can come in and be around him at various stages, but he's the one who has to be on the last line of defence. Christensen, key player. You know, I don't think it's any coincidence that our results suffered when he wasn't playing, and hopefully his injury problems will be sorted over the summer with a good rest. Then you start thinking about, you know, your defenders, and you know, I'm a fan of Byrne. I'm not, you know, Hutchison and Bodroff for me don't do it. So we need to look for another centre back, and I'm not sure if Turner's the answer. So you know, probably Byrne is the most experienced out of all those players in the Championship. I thought he'd get got a bit of a rough deal, so burn as well for me. I'd also like us to try and get husband back as well. So, you know, we saw this year how important fullbacks were, both attacking and defending, and I think he's shown enough in his games that he can do the job for us, so we should go straight back and try and sign him permanently. And then I'm struggling, really, for the fifth player, to be honest with you, Russ.
Okay.
I'm thinking of a central midfielder, you know, and I look at Parker, Tunnicliffe. What if Guthrie signs? You know, I've said LVC already. So the other key one is the goalkeeper. Do you stick with Bettinelli, or do you go and get a more experienced goalkeeper to be the number one? We certainly need another goalkeeper, but whether it's to be his backup or be the main man. So yeah, there's no real outstanding ones. You've got McCormick, you've got LBC, and then you're struggling, really. So can't give you the five, I'm afraid, Russ.
Okay, let me ask you this again. I'm thinking big picture, like I said. I am thinking this upcoming season, but in the future. Say, in another year, would you possibly put Emerson Hyman on that list?
Well, he's going to be, I mean, that's a different question. So you can be key with these players. You can go to Hyman, you can go to Woodrow, you can go to Roberts and say, you're all going to have your chance next year. But we saw how youngsters, and certainly of their build, I mean, you know, Hyman and Roberts, Hyman probably deal with it a bit more because he's, you know, he's got a bit about him which I think people haven't seen that much of. But I don't think he's going to be a key player next year. He'll certainly play, but I don't see him being a starter every week.
Okay.
But you need to sell it to him because he's contract.
Right,
he's only
right. That's what I'm talking about, Mike. I'm just talking about him specifically, not for this year, but say in 2 years.
Yeah. Well, I would love to see a midfield in 2 years, the first day of the 2016 season, and a midfield of LVC and Hyman and Williams and Roberts. That is a
wow.
dream.
Wow, no, that would
That's
be
not
something.
I'd like to see that line up anyway, but, you know, that's what you look at. You know, yeah, and then Woodrow and Dembele up front.
Yeah.
You know, so there are players there. But can they be the core, the team you build it around? I don't think they're ready for that yet for next year.
Okay, because I am talking about a core, but the players that we're talking about right now are a year away, is what you're saying. You're saying 2016, another year, and then maybe some of these other players could be part of that core, but not yet. That's why you're struggling, Mike, honestly, to get the five, because do we have five players that can be the core this upcoming year? That's a very good point by you. I'm glad that you put it that way.
Yeah, I don't think we have. I think, you know, for promotion, we've got to look at another two or three key players to supplement McCormick and LVC, really, because I think he will be key. But, yeah, McCormick needs some help in leading the team, because I don't think Parker's going to play next year. I think he's done. I think his legs have gone now.
No, fair enough. Fair enough on Scott Parker. David, to you, do you have five players?
I'm actually shocked, because when you was going to ask Mike to name his five, I was going to say Grimmer, 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 and Grimmer. And he didn't mention him once, so I'm like...
I'm not saying he shouldn't play.
Yeah, no. I know, Mike. I know the thing, and this is what makes it hard, because we could easily name five who should play, but to pick five to build the team around, obviously, you know, I was going to say Kiraly, Voza, Cheehy should not be considered whatsoever, obviously. But I agree. I mean, McCormack is a, you know, he's a must, isn't he? LVC is a must. You have to agree with those, definitely. And I thought it was going to be ridiculous, but I actually was going to say maybe we should go for Husband. From what I saw of Husband, the little I saw of Husband.
Right.
To build a team around him, I don't know. But certainly, yeah, to be a regular. The goalkeeper is a very good question as well, because I think Bettinelli has been excellent in the main. But there have also been, you know, a few little things of concern. He's kicking, a few sort of mistakes, a bit of a temperament issue occasionally, running out of his goal and berating the officials. But I think you're going to go a long way to find someone, you know, with more prospects than him. You may find someone who can do a job, but in the short term, but I don't know. So I would like to include Bettinelli as well in that. In terms of defence, you know, apart from Husband, who showed promise, I'm finding it hard. You know, I can't get a Rizla paper between Hutchison and Bodiroff and Byrne as a long term, really, because I like them all in their own ways, but I'm not sure which one should be the, you know, the answer, if any of them. And the same with Turner. Yeah, I think he did an okay job for us, but I don't think he was outstanding. He didn't stand out head and shoulders above anyone else. So I'm not sure about any of the defence myself. And then it comes down to, you know, other people such as, I'd love to see George Williams part of the team, a regular part of the team. But, and you know, he's making great progress back from his injury. And hopefully he'll be there or thereabouts at the start of the season. But, you know, will it be too much for him to be, you know, a cornerstone of the team from day one, both in terms of his development and, you know, his recuperation? It's very interesting that, you know, I posed you both a question the other day about who the best wingers are in the Championship, in your opinion.
Right.
And that's because I was asked by George's dad what our opinions were, because George wants to study other wingers and to sort
of get
some tips from them as part of his rehab. I hope,
that's,
I'm sure Steve won't mind you sharing that. But, yeah, George is going to be studying the people that we've suggested, as you know, among others.
Yeah.
I think apparently he wanted to study Hazard as well, but I said to them that's not allowed because he plays for the other team in Fulham. But, you know, he wants to study people that we think are wingers to see how they play and to see if he can pick up tips and, you know, and amend maybe what he does as part of his rehab process. So I'd
see,
love to see George in there. I'd love to see George in. But, you know, and the same is Pat Roberts. It's the other one, really. I think if you could sort of, you know, have halves in this, you know, there'll definitely be halves towards that five, because I'm struggling to make whole players as well.
Right.
Between Pat Roberts and George Williams, I think maybe one of them should always feature maybe every week, if there's not place for both of them. But it depends on, as I say, who they have around them, because, you know, if, you know, Mike's team that he mentioned, I guess could be perceived as being a bit lightweight, his midfield four. So there would need to be the right people around it to make it, you know, work. Parker I'd love to have as a cornerstone of the team, but I kind of agree that I think he's, you know, his best days are behind him now. So whilst he could do a job for us, there's not, you know, it's not a long-term situation if he manages to play.
Okay.
Saying that, who knows? You know, he's been great. But so I'd say definitely McCormack, LVC. Yeah, I'd like to see Husband back.
Okay.
I think I'd like to have Bettinelli. And I think George and Pat, you know, half each as well there. I know
half
it's cheating,
each.
But...
No,
yeah,
it's fine.
But that kind of gives me five, almost.
No, it does. It's the Mimi way of doing it. I got it, David. It's fine. The point five. I like it. Okay. And honestly, as we're going through this and Mike, I'm going to go back to because I, you know, again, I think I made a mistake here. I should have nailed it down instead of putting next season in the future. Maybe I should have just said next season, because I think maybe that possibly could have confused a few people by putting in the words and the future. So that's my fault, because again, we're going to get a lot. I'm going to give you guys a lot of names because everyone has a different five. But Mike, did you have something you wanted to share?
Yeah, I was just going to agree with David, really. You know, why don't managers do that with youngsters? We're struggling. You know, people say, oh, you can't play Williams, you can't play Roberts. So exactly what he says. Why don't you give them a half each? Why don't you alternate it? One starts one week. And you know,
that's a good idea.
They're still going to get 20-odd games a season or starts, and it keeps the opponents, you know, on their toes. And
they're going to be fresh, Mike.
Fresh.
Yeah.
Because I have real concerns that we're now going to put walls up to block youngsters again. And so when you talk about the future, everything that I hated over the last 3 or 4 years, where we were stopping youngsters getting games, and then they've gone and got games this year, rightly or wrongly for certain ones, but you've had fans turn on them, they've lost their confidence. The manager of them for the last few years lost confidence in them as well. And so you can just see it in the summer, filling the team up again with a load of has-beens. And it's so important that we don't do that. And I hope the club don't go down that route and just stick with, yes, we can't name five players. So that's key, isn't it? That's showing what they need to go out and target. Five starters, or at least, you know, 18-man squad players who are going to be key for us to get promotion next year. But don't lose sight of those youngsters, because you need to keep them happy because of their contracts, and we need to get extensions on some of those other lads, because we're into the last year of their contracts, and we want them there for when we're in the Premier League in 2 years.
I hope you're right there, Mike. And again, what's interesting about this, because you really have diagnosed the situation, the current situation, and I am agreeing with you. You know, I was thinking 3 to 5, maybe I should be looking more towards the 5, like you're saying, 5 starters, 5 additions to the starting 11. But that still leaves you with players that you need to build around, and that's what's interesting about this, because you got to think of the players that you can count on each and every week. But David brings up a great point, and so do you. Well, maybe you have players that can alternate, because we do have some good young talent. So why not use more of your squad and include more people and just make it a rotation? And then some, maybe they come off the bench. Some start one game, some start the other game. I don't think that's such a crazy idea, Mike.
Well, ideally, what I'd like is, if they're going to go down, you know, you have 11, even if you had 11 senior players,
right,
and the next alternate is the youngsters, then I'd be okay with that. But if you suddenly have 18 or 19, 23, 24-year-old pluses, then you're just blocking these lads again, and you're sending them out on loan, and they're 22 and they've only played one game, you know, and that's no good to anyone.
Right. No, that's, again, it's, these are all wonderful points, because I don't want to see the young players get blocked. I'm glad that you brought that up, Mike, because they need to start playing and they need to start being part of Fulham's future. That's why this is an interesting discussion, because, again, that's why I brought up the name Hyman. Just want to bring that up. I don't think that he will be part of the core this year, but maybe next year. George Williams, like David said, maybe he has a role. Maybe it's not a core role this year, but maybe it's half a role, like with Pat Roberts. And you get these young players involved, but you have to surround them with key players, and that's going to deal with recruitment this summer. It's a mix. They need to get the mix right, but they need to diagnose the players that they want to be part of that starting 11 and that, you know, and that 18 each and every week. You know, again, you can mix and match, but they need to find their squad. They need to find the players that they want to be part of it. That's why I said 5. Let's just start with 5, and it's interesting that we're struggling with the 5. And you'll find it interesting, some of the names that have been brought up here, guys, because I'm going to go through the list and get your thoughts, and we'll move on. On the College Talk Facebook page, I'll start with Chris Cox. He said Marcus Bettinelli, LVC, Patrick Roberts, Matt Smith, Ross McCormack. David Phillips said Bettinelli, Hutchinson, Christensen, Roberts, McCormack. Justin White said, I'm not sure there are 5 players that deserve to wear the shirt, to be honest. Keep McCormack, Bettinelli, and Smith. I think Roberts and Christensen should have more time on the pitch, but choose 5 players from this season. Ben Pandeloid said Bettinelli, Byrne, LVC, Roberts, McCormack. Yavor Alexiev, Bettinelli, LVC, Kaká, McCormack, Woodrow. Tom O'Sullivan, Betts, LVC, Kaká, McCormack, Hutchinson, or Husband. Kind of going on Dave's point 5, you know, that's kind of interesting. Ben Reed, Bettinelli, Byrne, Hutch, LVC, and McCormack. Trucker Dave, he says Bettinelli, LVC, Kaká, Ross. However, without manager who can manage them, it's all irrelevant who we try to build around. Interesting take there. Let's see. David, you'll appreciate this one. You know, this is a funny one. Angus Caldwell, Corrali, Amorebieta, Vozer, Fofana, Fotheringham. Thought you would appreciate that one. Bugler, for what it's worth, my 5 would be Bettinelli, LVC, Hyman, Roberts, and McCormack. Ken Elsif said Bettinelli, Byrne, LVC, McCormack, Smith. Jack Arney said McCormack, Bettinelli, LVC, Smith, and Hyman. So there have been a few for Hyman. Graham Piper says it depends on who wants to say. So I'll go for Bettinelli, Hyman, LVC, Roberts, and and Dembele. Guys, I could keep going on and on. There are so many that have answered us, and it really is wonderful. Thank you, everyone. I just can't go through everyone's top five here, but thank you very much for being part of this Facebook question. And, Mike, just right back to you. What are your thoughts of what the Fulham supporters had to say about their five?
Well, I'm really glad that, you know, most of them are still listing those key youngsters. So that's good that they've got faith in them and they know how important it is. I was happy that Smith was only mentioned, I think, once, possibly. because, if he's going to stay, he's an important plan B, but I don't see him as, you know, the answer.
Right.
You know, him and McCormick up front is not going to power us to promotion. It's going to be, you know, other parts of the team that are key. So people forget that those two scored lots of goals for each other at Leeds the season before last, and Leeds were still in the bottom half of the table. So it's not just about having a partnership up front. And, let's look at those midfielders. So you have LVC, you have Heidman, yeah? You know, you've got Tunnicliffe. And you go into next summer with those three. You might have Parker still hanging around. I've seen enough of Guthrie to think he's worth a gamble. And then you look at one key holding midfielder. So is that the five or six players good enough for the two or three positions, you know, in central midfield? Because that's another thing, formation-wise. Are we going to go the route that Bournemouth and Watford and everyone else plays, which is, you know, three midfielders, really, two wide men and one up front? And so if so, we need to strengthen that, you know, decide on the numbers and who's going to play in that midfield role. And we have definitely one in LVC. And it's a question of who else fits them. Heidman can play games. So in the midfield, I'd like us to bring in Guthrie and one other player, a proper defensive tackling midfielder. We haven't had one for years.
Okay. Very good take there, Mike. And you know, it's interesting because one of the questions, unfortunately, I was not able to ask Kit, and I'll be playing Kit's interview in a little bit. I wanted to get his thoughts on Watford and also on Bournemouth and how they built their squads to get up to the Premier League, and can you learn something from the way that they did it? And unfortunately, I was short for time, could not ask him that question, but that's something that I want to know. You know, again, do you change the formation? Do you change how you're going to play, the type of players you're going to bring in? Do you look at how teams did it this season, and do you adjust how you're going to do it moving forward? It's just an interesting topic. Unfortunately, I was not able to ask that. I just ran out of time. David, over to you. Real quick, what are your thoughts on what the Fulham supporters had to say, and then we will play the interview with Kit.
I think literally without exception, everyone had the same three, at least, of Bettinelli, LVC and McCormack. That was very, you know, those three appeared very much so. But I was actually interested what Mike just said there was, have you abandoned your 4-4-2 now, Mike? Because you're talking about playing effectively a 4-5-1 type scenario.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, so Mike, please tell me about it.
Yeah, well, it's exactly what Russ said. You know, you look at, so I've said all season you should go with 4-4-2, and I'm still a fan of that. I'd be quite happy to play that way. But it's a question of, you know, what's the current in vogue, you know, what's got teams promoted. So you look at last season, and I did analysis on last season, and the three teams that went up all played 4-4-2. You look at it this year, you look at Watford, look at Bournemouth, and the way they actually played in this league, and with the freedom and the pace and against defenders who, let's be clear, are not Premier League quality at all. So I think, you know, there's an argument for getting three midfielders somehow into the pitch. And I don't mean as a diamond. I mean, you know, look at the way those two teams played. So have I abandoned my 4-4-2 and having two fours up front? No, but I'm open to options, and I'd be quite happy to see a sort of go with the two wide men. You know, I mean, we spoke about key players. Kaká's one. You know, he's still in contract next year. And whoever is manager, I would just not muck around with him anymore and just say, you're a left winger, stay out on the left and head towards that box. Head down towards that box and get his penalties, free kicks and get crosses in. Don't confuse the lad. Just tell him to do that. So, yes, no, good. Okay. You know, you have to be open to all options.
Okay, good stuff, Mike. And listen, the fact that you're open to it, that's wonderful, you know, because David brought up a good point. You were all about the 4-4-2. You still prefer it, but you can see a different way. And that's what's interesting because, I believe it or not, I worked at Brentford. I worked at Bournemouth, and they're playing, you know, a different way, and it's working for them. And, you know, it might be something that Fulham need to look at and study their opponents and see how they did it. That's why, you know, I wish I asked the question, guys, but I was not able to. Unfortunately, just for time reason, not that I didn't want to, it's just that I was limited on time, could not ask the question. But, guys, we are running short of time because we do have a guest coming up shortly. So I am going to play the kid interview that I did with him yesterday. I'll be curious your thoughts afterwards. But without further ado, you know, again, it's about 7 minutes long. It was just a pure honor to do this with a full manager. This is the first time I've interviewed a full manager, so it was a big deal for me. So please listen to it, and let me know what you think afterwards. So here is the interview I did with Kit Simons. Joining us now is the full manager, Kit Simons. Kit, first of all, welcome to Cottage Talk, and I'll start with a question for you right here. This has been a difficult season, but Fulham are safe and will be in the championship next season. I'm curious, but what has been the positives that have come out of this season for you?
Well, it has been a difficult season for the football club and everybody concerned. But also, I'm a very positive person. I think there's been a lot of positives that have come out of it. I mean, probably the main one for me would be the emergence of quite a few of our young players who sort of burst onto the scene, if you like, and done exceptionally well. You know, your Marcus Bettinelli's. And your Lasvig and Christensen, to name two of them, have done exceptionally well for us this year. And obviously the other end of the scale, you know, Ross McCormack on I think 19 goals at the moment, and had a very good season for us.
And that's fantastic. And on the flip side, because again, you know, we're talking about the positive, but let's look at the negative here. What has been the most challenging part of the job as the manager this season that you will learn from and be better for it?
Well, I think I've learned a lot as the season's gone on. And, you know, when I took over, we had, you know, 1 point from 21 and we're cut adrift at the foot of the table. So I had to go out and we had to get wins, you know, to be very, very aggressive in our forward play. And I did that to start with, and we picked up some wins quite early on and started slowly, you know, moving up the table. We had a fantastic run, but didn't seem to move too much because we were so far adrift. But then as the season went on, I then had to sort of almost change some of my playing philosophies and principles to an extent. And towards the end of the season, it got quite ugly at times and we had to just grind out results. So I learned the importance of that. And the main thing was to keep the club in the championship. You know, we ended up in a bit of a sticky situation and it looked quite precarious for a while. And I had to make sure that we just got the results needed by hook or by crook to keep Fulham in the championship. And that's what we did. It wasn't always pretty, but it proved to be effective.
Well, in the end, we're safe, and that's the most important thing, like you mentioned. But let's look towards next season. What do you think is needed in regards to the talent you have, along with adding additional talent brought to the club for Fulham to move from the back of the table, which we ended up this season, to be pushing for promotion next season?
Yeah, I mean, player acquisitions are huge. Going into a season of championship, which is such a tough league, you need a squad fit for purpose to be looking at gain promotion, which is what we're after. And you need a strong element of championship experience within that squad. You know, it's not just about assembling a squad of good players. They need to be the right type of players as well. And as I said, fit for purpose is key to me. And so our player is crucial. You know, like I said, we've got good young players here and they've all had that little taste and have all gained that invaluable experience over the course of this season. But we need to make sure we've got the right players alongside them to subsidise that.
Okay, great. Kit, what is going to be your next step as Fulham manager after the season ends?
Well, straight away, you know, following on from what I just said, it's the player acquisition. You know, there'll be quite a lot of movement this summer regarding our players. Quite a few comings and goings. We ended up having, you know, 7 players in on loan in the end, and some of them we will look to try and extend their stay at Craven Cottage because they've done very, very well for us. hopefully that will be possible. But it's getting the players that we need into the building as soon as possible. I'm a big believer in pre-season is absolutely vital. And come January, February time, you reap the rewards from your pre-season or you pay the price if your pre-season hasn't been right. And we need to make sure that come January, February, this coming season, we're reaping the rewards and we're really strong and we're pushing on then.
I certainly hope so, Kit. Really, certainly hope so. Before I let you go, what is going to be your approach in regards to player selection with your starting 11 and potential substitutes against Norwich City in the final match of the season?
Yeah, it's a bit of a funny one because it's not a nothing game by any stretch, but you know Norwich are well and truly in the playoffs. Their place is cemented there. You know, we're safe in the Championship, so you know, some people look at it as our job's done. But, you know, we're finishing the season strongly. We're 5 games unbeaten and a 5-game unbeaten run at the moment. 4 games away from home, we're unbeaten. So I want to finish this season strongly. So I'm going to take the game very, very seriously and obviously look to try and win it, put a strong team out, what I think is capable of winning the game. But also, and I think you'll probably see this on the substitutes bench, I'm also conscious of giving some of the young players some more experience for next season and some young players hopefully we'll be seeing a lot more of.
Well, that's great. Before I let you go, talking about young players, I want to ask you about one that has missed a good amount of time, and that's Lasse Vigen Christensen. What has been his progress in regards to his injury?
Yeah, really strong now. He's looking. He's actually looking in really, really good shape at the moment. He's not in full training yet, but it's modified training, so he's back on doing ball work. It's just obviously come back a little bit too late for him, unfortunately. But the medical guys at the football club are very confident now that they're on top of this hamstring problem that he'd been suffering with. It was a biomechanical issue, and we're pretty confident that should be sorted. So moving on for next season. We're expecting him, we're pretty sure he's going to be ready for pre-season, come in fit and strong and have a big push and play a big part for the club next season. He was doing tremendously well before he picked up his initial injury. He was possibly or arguably our star man at the time, scoring goals and having assists and showing a huge amount of energy in midfield. So we're very keen to get Lass back flying again, and I'm pretty sure that's going to be the case.
Listen, I look forward to seeing him in a foam shirt again. And listen, best of luck on Saturday and looking forward to next season, Kit. Thank you so much for joining me today on Cottage Talk.
Listen, my pleasure, and thanks to all the Fulham fans over in the States. Thanks very much.
Okay, great. Thanks, Kit.
No problem.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys. Take care.
Cheers.
Bye now.
Bye. Okay, that was Kit Simons joining us today on Cottage Talk. Okay, guys, we are back, and that's an interview I did yesterday with the Fulham manager, and major thank you to Sarah Brooks for making that possible. And, regardless of how I feel about Kit Simons' job this season, it really is an honor to talk to the Fulham manager, and I do wish him the best. I want the club to do well. I like Kit's approach as a manager, as a person, I should say, not as a manager. I'm talking about two different things. I mean, as a person, his glass half full approach, I do like, and I wish him the best. I do wish him the best, and it really was a pleasure having him on. All right, David, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts of my interview with Kit Simons?
Well, I'm glad as Americans have been given a mention, and you know, it's great that this American show gets recognized by Kit over there in the old good old limey UK, isn't it?
Okay, David.
That was a crap American impression. That was even worse.
Yes,
than
it was.
When I do you, Russ, wasn't it? I might as well.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Trying to do you from you, that was awful, wasn't it? But
yeah, it was terrible.
It's nice that Kit obviously listens to the show and knows that Cottage Talk is a show for. Only for American Fulham fans, obviously. So that was a good start for me. Secondly, I was very impressed with the way that we needed the wins and the points, and he set out aggressively to go and get that. But then he decided to change his mind, and he decided he didn't want that anymore, and we had to play negatively. That kind of contradicted itself almost. So
It didn't wash with me, I'm afraid, Russ. I'm afraid I think he got found out. His tactics were found out. And unfortunately, I thought that he's making excuses for himself, really, that, you know, what we saw of those awful negative performances against Wigan and against Rotherham, you know, really, you know. And the fact that, you know, the reason we kind of survived is that probably there were three worse teams than us. It wasn't because of his tactics, I think. It was just that there were three worse teams, and thankfully we just about had enough points in the bag. I mean, you know, I set the team up aggressively. We needed the points to win. So why didn't he do that for the rest of the season? You know, that's what kind of stands out for me, apart from the fact that obviously he obviously doesn't know what the show cottage talk is about. But then again, I suppose he's been pretty busy, so, you know, but I think we should actually send him an invite or a link to all the cottage talk shows so he can actually sit down and listen to them, and then he'll know what the show's about. I know he won't like what Yanis has to say and everything else, but, you know, freedom of speech and all that.
No, it is freedom of speech, and we're entitled to our opinion on everything, and that's why I love doing this show, guys. And like I said, and I'll be perfectly honest here, as a person, I like Kit Simons. I want him to be part of Fulham Football Club, you know, because, again, a player, you know, under 21s, you know, and now the manager, you know, again, as a person, I like Kit Simons. I wasn't crazy about his approaches, and especially at the end of the season, we've talked about that. But he actually explained that, which I found interesting. Guys, we do have our guest, but before I bring him on, Mike, I want to get your thoughts on the interview, then I'll bring on James.
Well, yeah, I mean, well done for getting him on, and I'm sure it took a lot of persuading of Sarah to finally allow you to have the interview, but well done, Russ, and I'm sure there's going to be some people out there who say, oh, you should have been more hard-hitting, but, you know, in the end, it's about communicating with the club, and, you know, hopefully this will allow other people to come on from the club and, you know, despite whatever we say, because we do reach a lot of fans on this show. And,
we do.
So, yeah, well done for that.
You, Mike.
I'd
and,
agree with,
you know,
yeah.
No, go ahead. You had something else you wanted to say?
I was just going to just continue on and just say that what David picked out about how he said, you know, he set him up aggressively to get points because we were playing catch-up. He also said it in the interview with Sarah. And it is quite telling, you know, what changed? At what point did he think, okay, we've played aggressive and we've got some points and I'm on a good run, now I'll tweak it. Why would you change it? You know, and he's right at the end, you know, he had to play ugly, a lot more ugly than we did before, and we got the points, and we got over the line in the end, and we'll probably finish with a win tomorrow, and it'll look a lot healthier. But there were not a lot of good performances through the season. I think that's what you have to look back at: 38 games, and yes, we picked up a lot of points in those games, I suppose, but they weren't great performances, were they? But the one thing I was happy for is he looks a lot better than he did a month ago in some interviews, and obviously the pressure got to him, and he admitted that as well, that he hasn't been sleeping. And, you know, I wish him well for whatever happens over the next week or two, and we'll see if he's still in charge.
Right, and I'm glad that you put it that way, because I personally do wish him well, and it was, like I said, an honor to get him on, and again, thank you, Sarah, if you're listening, for arranging this interview. She knew that I wanted to get Kit on for a long time, and she finally was able to make it happen at the end of the season, and I'm sorry it could not be live. This is a timing thing, you know. Again, you know, this is the time we could do it. I had to record it, and I took advantage of the opportunity I had. The time I had, it was a limited time, but I am so glad. Thank you, Kit, if you are listening, thank you, Kit, for joining me yesterday. It really was truly special, so I do appreciate him coming on and sharing whatever he had to say about the club. You know, again, we can go back and forth of what I asked, but again, I tried to ask questions to get information, and that's exactly what I did. All right, guys, let's move on, and let's bring on our guest, because I definitely want to speak to our guest. And joining us now is James Kent, and James Kent is a Norwich City supporter. And he also was a blogger. I believe he still does blog every once in a while. And he also owns a pretty cool website that I would recommend you checking out for fitness called www.fitnessbacker.com. Definitely check out this website. I was checking out today. It's pretty cool. James, thank you very much for joining us again on Connors Talk.
Hi, Russ. Great to speak to you as always.
How are you doing, James?
Yeah, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. Listen, before we go any further, there's been a bone of contention between me and my co-host, David Holly. Tell me the proper way to say the name of your club.
Of my club, Norwich City.
Norwich City?
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
No, thank you, Norwich.
David, it's Norwich City. How about that, David? Did I say that correctly?
No, Russ. No, Norwich City. Not Norwich City.
I don't say Norwich City. You keep saying that.
Say
I don't
Norwich
do it that
City.
Way.
You said Norwich.
Okay. Okay. Enough is enough. Sorry, I had to bring that up, James. We've been going back and forth for over a year on how I say the name of your club. So I just needed clarification on that. So thank you.
All right.
Let's start here, James. You know, it's funny because you and I have emailed over the years, and we've compared our clubs as being small clubs when we were in the Premier League and trying to figure out how we could both stay in the Premier League. Fortunately, we're both now back in the Championship. But luckily for you, your club is in the playoffs, which is a good thing. And, you know, best of luck to you in the playoffs. But I just want to get an overall sense from you just about this season in the Championship for Norwich City.
Well, I think we'd say it's been a mixed season. Prior to the start of the season, I think a lot of Norwich fans would have expected to be in the top two. And certainly we felt that with the squad, you know, we had a lot of Championship experience in that squad and a lot of players who have done very well in the Championship in the past. You know, obviously, as you know, we gave Neil Adams the job, which was a mixed reaction to that. A lot of people feeling he didn't have enough experience. You know, others feeling he deserved the opportunity. So it was, you know, in a case of how he was going to get on, and I don't think anyone really knew. He had a good pre-season, and it appeared that he was going to, you know, play attacking, exciting football. And at the end of the day, it didn't work. And however you want to dress it up, whether he resigned or whether he was sacked, a change was needed. And I think most people would say that David McNally took a massive gamble and brought someone in from Scotland, and again, who mixed reaction from the fans. A lot of people, you know how it is, Russ, a lot of people don't really value Scottish football. So, you know, anyone that does anything in Scotland, it's immediately disregarded. So, you know, there was a mixed reaction to his appointment. And then it was a case of how he was going to get on.
Well, that's going to lead me to ask you. Just tell me about the manager, Alex Neil, and how it has worked out. And also, what do you think will be his approach with team selection against Fulham on Saturday? Because, again, you are going to be in the playoffs coming up shortly afterwards. Do you think he's going to go for a strong side, a youth side? You know, what do you think he's going to do tomorrow?
Well, in terms of Alex Neil, first of all, I just felt, looking at him coming in, that the man had something special about him, because he was getting something out of a Hamilton side that he shouldn't have been getting out of them. You know, he shouldn't have been looking in the top four or whatever in SBL, whatever you say about that league. It was a small club, and he was doing wonders there. And in terms of Norwich, it's a very different challenge for him coming in, because he's coming into a team that's expected to be at the top, not a team that's expected to be at the bottom. So it was a case of, could he get more out of the squad than the previous manager? And I think most people felt that there was more to come, and really he's managed to get that and done wonders for a number of players. In terms of team selection, I wouldn't be surprised to see a few players rested, because, you know, obviously the playoffs are now going to be a priority, and this game to us is a bit of a free game. It's probably not going to change anything other than maybe who we would play in the playoff semi-final. So I'm sure he's going to want to win, but like I say, he's probably going to if he feels he wants a certain player fresh for the playoff game, he's probably going to rest them and rather than risk it. So, yeah. I think it'll be. I don't think he'll play a youth team, but I don't think it's necessarily going to be Norwich's strongest team.
Okay. Interesting. You know, again, I've been trying to get a read on what the manager's going to do, and I've been reading different things, and I really haven't got a really strong read one way or another exactly what he is going to do. So it should be interesting when the starting 11 comes out there, James. And just overall, you know, this season, you know, again, in years past under different managers, you know, there have probably been different strengths and weaknesses. What have been the strengths this season, and what have been the weaknesses?
Well, I think after last season in the Premier League, a lot of fans were somewhat disillusioned by the style of play that we saw under Chris Hughton, and you know the big side of it for me in the summer was to sort that out. As much as you know, we wanted promotion, we wanted to see the team playing attacking football again, and Neil Adams started that process to his credit, and. And Alex Neil has just kind of carried that on. So certainly going forward, you know, Norwich have been good. I think we've got four players who scored over 10 goals this season. So, you know, no issues there at all. In terms of weaknesses, I think the biggest, and this is, I think, really the answer to your question on how you play against Norwich City,
right,
is that the biggest weakness we've had is when teams play this kind of defensive part of the bus football, we don't seem to be very good at dealing with that kind of situation. So that's been the big weakness, is when a team says they're going to be disciplined, they're going to put their men behind the ball, and they're not going to be hugely interested in attacking, then Norwich has struggled to find a way through that. And I think part of the reason behind that is because if there's a weakness in the squad, it's probably a lack of attacking wide players, because we only really have Nathan Redmond, and the lack of options there mean that we're continuously playing players that are more interested in those central areas, so we're finding harder to get around teams when they're very disciplined and organized.
Okay, very interesting. And let's go on the flip side. Again, I'm going to give you a little bonus question here. As a Norwich City supporter, what Fulham supporter, what Fulham player concerns you in the match tomorrow?
Well, you know, I think it's – I don't know if I would necessarily be concerned about particular players. And I would be more concerned about the team being set up, as I've mentioned, in a kind of a disciplined manner, to
David's laughing.
Never gonna
go
happen.
Ahead.
Never gonna happen.
Yeah, no. There's no chance of that happening, then, is there?
I guess if you're talking about a player, you probably worry the most about Ross McCormack, because he's got the pedigree in the Championship. To score goals, and I think a lot of people were surprised to see Fulham spend the kind of money they did on him in the summer, and I would say he's probably not performed as £11 million suggests, but he's still
right.
got the ability to
Can I
score
can I just
goals.
Clarify that, James? Because again, there's been some misconception on the £11 million. You know, again, we've heard different things, but well, we've also been heard that it was up to 11 million, meaning that if we got promoted and all kinds of incentives would lead up to that point. So
yeah.
I don't think it's 11 million. That's just my thought on it. I don't think it is, but everyone just throws out the 11 million figure. What was that?
I was just saying that these transfers are always structured to, you know, 7 million up front, 2
right.
million if you win promotion, you know. So I'm sure you're right about that. It wasn't 11 million straight cash, no matter what.
Right.
But still, whatever it was a lot of money. When you consider that Norwich is spending £3 million on Graben, and we saw that as, you know, that's kind of Championship kind of money. So whatever it was, it's going to be at least double that. So it was a lot of money in the Championship.
Listen, the approaches are completely different between how your club approached the summer of this season going into the season and how Fulham did. And, well, we could see the results. You guys got the results, and Fulham did not. Obviously, your approach worked this season. I mean, and that's a credit to Norwich City and the management, how they set your team up. It definitely worked, because at least you're in the playoffs, James.
So for a matter of interest, what would you say was Fulham's approach to the season?
Well, they did not go with players, I guess you could say, that had championship pedigree. They did not have that type of pedigree, and of course they also had Felix McGath in charge. They spent a lot of money. We talked about this before you came on one player, and then they brought in many players on loan. And, you spent high on one player and really didn't bring in players that had that type of championship material, that were used to playing in the championship. And your team was pretty much intact, and you added a few pieces. So in my book, the way that you guys did it certainly worked this season, James.
Yeah, I mean, I think compared to most clubs in the Premier League, Norwich had probably more championship players in their squad than any other, purely because they've played a lot of football at that level and haven't played a lot in the Premier League. So, yeah, they were well adjusted, and I think the signings that Neil Adams made were again, as you say, championship kind of players.
Right.
And that served the team well.
Right. And on the flip side, again, another reason why possibly Fulham were in the situation that they did is that, again, we let many players go, which was the right thing to do. We needed to get rid of some of the older players, and that's what they did. Your team was pretty much intact, like you've mentioned, and so that's another difference, and probably a factor here on the development of Fulham this season. And again, to your credit, your team was built really to go down and come back up. And again, I wish you the best in the playoffs, James. You know that if it's, as long as you're not playing Fulham, I hope the best for your club.
Yeah.
Seriously. But before I let you go, I want to get some questions from my co-host. David, I'll start with you. Do you have a question for James?
Well, the only question you can ask really about Norwich is, in the playoffs, do you want to be the team that knocks out Ipswich? And would it be in the semi-final stage or at Wembley? Or would you rather they got knocked out in the other leg?
Well, we played Ipswich twice this season, and we've beaten them both times, and I would relish the chance of playing Ipswich in the semi-final, because I think of all the teams in there, it's probably our best chance of getting through and winning, whereas I think the likes of Derby and Middlesbrough are harder games. So I would love to be drawn against Ipswich in the semi-final, and then possibly playing Middlesbrough in the final, which I think will be a tough game, but I think the team are most likely to come through on the other side. So, yeah.
No, well, I'll give you the chance, of course, to play them home and away, obviously, but I just wonder whether you'd actually like to play them in the final and knock them out in the final, which would be kind of, obviously, a better sort of bragging rights, wouldn't it, in years to come?
The table is right now. It's very unlikely that Norwich are going to play Ipswich in the final. But if it were to happen, I would personally not want that, because I think there's too much pressure going into a playoff final as it is, and to add the kind of local rivalry to it, I think that would be a bit too stressful for a lot of fans. So I think it'd be better to play them in the semi final when the pressure's not as great, and then play someone else in the final. Because either way, if you're knocking Ipswich out, you're knocking Ipswich out. So I don't think people are going to be that bothered whether it's in the final or in the semi-final.
Fair enough. Obviously, you have the other added thing that you have a poor record against us, so you yet could sort of end up lower down than you might think. Because at the moment, obviously, you've got the guaranteed home leg second, haven't you, in the playoffs if you finish in third or fourth. But will the Fulham hoodoo continue? Obviously, it's not as crucial as it might have been, but we have an unexplainably good record against you guys for some reason.
We do.
I don't know. I can't see how that will continue the way we've been playing, but football is a weird game, and to end the season with three straight wins for Fulham would be not only Fulhamish, but it would be kittish as well, I think.
Kittish. That's good there, David. All right, real quick, over to you, Mike. Do you have a question for James?
Not so much of a question, but really, you mentioned at the top of the interview that you feel you've had a mixed season. Well, I certainly have taken that mixed season for us, and have no worries of tomorrow about meeting a team that parks the bus, is organised and disciplined, because we're none of that. All the best, because I hope Norwich do go up, because I see you as a threat if you stay down. So yeah, I want to get rid of all those teams. So good luck in getting through.
You hear that, James? We want you to go up so you don't bother us next season.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm sure all Norwich fans want to go up, but it's, you know, as you know, the playoffs is a big lottery, and you know, I would say Norwich and Middlesbrough are cut above the other teams that are likely to be in the playoffs, but that doesn't really guarantee anything. So, you know, anyone
can win.
Well,
honestly, James, I wish you the best of luck, and I've known you for a while, and you know, again, I don't have anything against your club except, obviously, you know, one phone to beat your club, and we'll see what happens tomorrow. Real quick, before I let you go, give me your prediction for tomorrow.
Well, like I said, really, I think it's going to be an anticlimax. I think this is a different game to what it would have been if Norwich were in a kind of a chance of the top two going into it. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see a draw.
Okay. And that would be actually be fitting between our clubs, seriously.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in a way, you know, Bournemouth winning the other day and Norwich winning against Middlesbrough kind of got me out of a bit of a hole, because I didn't want to have to predict a Norwich win, but it would have had to be that if they were in contention. But, you know, as I say, nothing's really going to change from that game. I think I don't think, to be honest, the Norwich players are going to really be up for it. I think they're going to just think it's, oh well, this is just a free game, we've got to worry about the playoffs. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they're a bit lackluster. So yeah, I don't think it's going to be a classic, but we'll see.
Okay, David, have a good time then. David's going to the match. Mike, are you going as well?
Yeah, I'm Mike.
Okay, you both are going to the
match.
Yeah,
I'm there as well. I'm there.
Okay. So let's hope James is wrong, and it's actually a good match. You know, let's hope he's wrong, but I can definitely see his point on that. Listen, James, before I let you go, just tell us a little bit about your website, because I checked it out today. It's actually pretty interesting, and then I'll let you go, my friend.
Yeah, well, I don't remember when I spoke to you last, but I know that... I think you may remember that I was working for a fitness startup at the time, and I think you might have put something out about it. I don't know, but anyway, I left that role for a number of reasons, but I really wanted to do something similar, but was a bit more in my own kind of vision, and so I had the idea, and you know, I mainly based off my own kind of progress in health and fitness recently, and I wanted to really just create something to inspire other people. And so, you know, I created the website, and it's been progressing quite nicely. And so, yeah, I just want to keep progressing and keep moving forward with it, because it seems like it's something that people are interested in.
Yeah, well, I'm a fitness guy, so that's why I wanted to mention that for my friends in England. Definitely mention it. Again, it's www.fitnessbacker.com. Go check out James' site. James, thank you so much for joining us tonight on Cottage Talk.
Pleasure.
Cheers, James.
Okay. Cheers, James. Okay.
Cheers, bye.
That was James Kent, who is a Norwich City supporter, and he's not blogging that much lately, but he has blogged a great deal in the past about Norwich City, and obviously has his own little venture there that I just mentioned. Guys, we are running short of time, so I'm going to have to speed this up. And David, we're going to go right to you, because again, we did a nice little preview of Norwich City with James. So Let's start with the ref. Let's go right to the ref. Tell us about the ref of the match tomorrow.
Well, the ref tomorrow is David Coote. He was the ref for the live TV match away at Brentford, which we were winning but conspired to lose, probably rightly so. He was also the ref for that fantastically silly match at Wolves in the Cup where we became Siberia in about the space of 5 minutes. And he's 32 years old from Newark in Nottinghamshire, not a million miles from me. And he's very much on the talent list for promotion to higher things, I think. So he is well rated, and I don't think we can complain about his performance, if I remember rightly, too much from the games we've had before. So let's hope once again that, you know, tomorrow he's fulfilling, you know, his potential to become, you know, a Premier League ref within the next year or two.
Okay, very good there, David. All right, just to mention real quick, a doubt for this match is Scott Parker. Highly doubt that he will be playing this match. He might, but you know, you never know. But he is a serious doubt for this match. So just keep that in mind. And Mike, I'm going to go to you. Who's your key player for Fulham tomorrow?
I'm going to say Bettinelli, because I think it's going to be potentially quite a high-scoring game. So he's going to have to be better than he was last week, because you could argue all three goals were for him, for his fault. So, for me, Bettinelli. He needs to step up and have a really good game.
It's Marcus Bettinelli. Great. David, how about you? Again, I don't think Scott Parker's going to play. Normally, you know, you would probably say Scott Parker. So who are you going to say this week?
Was there a pun there by Mike? Did Mike say he needs to be better and early than he was last week?
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Or did I mishear it? I don't know. But, yeah, I thought Mike said he needs to be better and early than last week. Anyway, I don't know. I suppose the obvious choice, again, is our old friend Ross McCormack, because he's out on a bit of a run at the moment. Saying that, suddenly the conspiracy theories come over me when you were talking to James there, and I'm thinking, well, what if one of these add-ons is that if he scores 20 goals in the season, we have to pay extra millions? So they'll probably drop him tomorrow, won't they, as he's on 19, so he won't play. They'll say he's injured, he can't play. So, you know, so maybe we won't see McCormack either, which is, you know, in a way logical if in a match it has no kind of real meaning, and if he is carrying an injury. So could be difficult. So I don't know. You're right about there is the potential to be a high-scoring game. It's really hard to pick. I don't think Parker will play. Parker said to me that he was unlikely to play himself. So I don't know. I'd love to see him start Pat Roberts tomorrow. So let's pick Pat Roberts he's going to start the first match for 15 years, and he's going to be a revelation, and we're going to say, why on earth didn't he not pick him all season? Let's sack the manager. So let's say Pat Roberts.
Okay, David. Pat Roberts it is. Let's go right into your starting 11.
Okay. Bettinelli, Grimmer, Hutchinson, Byrne, Husband. And then it gets awkward. But I want Pat Roberts to start because, you know, give him a chance for God's sake, you know. No Scott Parker. So I'd like to see Fofana play. I know he's a lone player, but I'd like to see him have a play. I think he'd need to play alongside probably Guthrie. And I'm sure Tynes Kiff will play nevertheless. So that means we'd have to play some sort of diamond formation with Pat Roberts playing at the top of the diamond, unless we sacrifice a forward. Up front, McCormack, obviously, if he is fit, despite the conspiracy theories I've just been having.
Right.
And, you know, much as I like to see Matt Smith, I think give Hugo a go. It could be his last game as well. He did, you know, he was unlucky last week. He did get involved. And there is they do work quite well together. And at least leave Matt Smith as a plan B, because if we're playing that kind of narrowish lineup I'm suggesting there with Pat Roberts, Matt Smith may not be the right answer really for that anyway. So, yeah, that'll be my team.
Okay, great. Mike, over to you.
It's a difficult one, because certainly after the game last week or during the week, it's been a case of, I don't want anyone playing who's not going to be here next year. I want everyone who's potentially going to be in our team playing. All the others can sod off, really. But then you try picking a midfield, and you can't pick two central midfielders who are Fulham players, not loanees. You've got Tunnicliffe, and there's no other central midfielder you can pick. So the team I've picked anyway is Bettinelli, Grimmer, Hutchison, Byrne, and Husband as well, because it should probably be Kavanagh, but I would like to think Husband will sign for us. And just for a stat for you, Russ, to finish the game season off, that will be the 24th different back four we have picked this season. Okay? And in midfield, I would go with Roberts, Tunnicliffe, Guthrie and Kaká. So four across the middle. And McCormick and Dembele up front.
Dembele, wow, I would like to see that. I would like to see, Mike. I'd be down to see Moussa Dembele. Again, it's been a while since we've seen him. That would be nice. Okay, let's go to predictions. Mike, I'll start with you. Give me your prediction for this match. It's going to be a difficult one to predict.
Yeah, I'm going to go 3-2, and I'm actually going to go 3-2 to us. I think it's going to be quite an open game. And,
really?
Quite relaxed, and there'll be mistakes. But, yeah, 3-2 to us.
Wow, a little positivity going for the victory. David, are you going to go for the victory?
Well, the last few times I've said we'll be beaten, we've actually won, so I'm going to have to say we're going to lose. I have to just say it, otherwise, it seems to be lucky for us. So I'm going to say it'll be 3-2 to Norwich then in that case, because on the hope that I'll be wrong again, basically.
Okay. Okay, fantastic. All right. We do have a couple predictions from the Fulham supporters on the Cards Talk Facebook page. Billy Marsh says 2-1 to Fulham. Never fails. Roger Lewis is going for a 2-2 draw. Tom Adaraman, thinking we can continue the tradition with a 1-0 win. Okay? And Giannis has, hey, Russ, we tend to be Norwich's bogey team, but I can see this ending 1-1. And I can see why you're going with that there, Giannis. I definitely understand that. Before I give my prediction, I do want to mention this. Guys, I did have a section planned to ask the co-host because Emilio started that a few weeks ago. I want to continue it. Unfortunately, we just ran out of time, but I promise we will be doing that. I'll be holding on to these questions, and because some of them are not timely, we can actually ask the questions in another show. So if you ask a question, doesn't mean that we're not going to answer it on an upcoming show of Cottage Talk. All right, guys, I'm going to go for my prediction, and I'm going to go with Mike Reich. I think Fulham are going to win. I'm going to go 2-1. With two goals from Matt Smith. And that's my way of saying that I think Ross McCormack's going to score two goals, David. Because I can't pick
that's
him.
Great.
It's got to be someone else. So I'm going
that's
two
great.
Goals for Matt Smith. Just like you.
That's great.
That's great.
Listen, one thing that's important.
I like how you said that. That's
Russ,
great.
Russ, there's an important announcement. I'm sure everyone saw it, but tickets for Norwich are now available on the gate tomorrow. They weren't, but they are. So,
thank you for sharing that, David.
You could jump on a plane and join us because Mike and I will be sitting there comparing our wonderful HTC One Android phones. So maybe you'd like to come and show us why your iPhone is such a great phone.
Well, again, listen, I've been contacted by many people that have the iPhone. Ben Reed, by the way, has the iPhone, loves the iPhone. Our friend Andy Buckley-Taylor, he got an iPhone, David. How about that? Andy Buckley-Taylor got an iPhone, and I love my iPhone. Unfortunately, I will not be able to make the trip because my family, one, will be split up as it stands competition season for my daughter. So, unfortunately, that won't happen. But, guys, maybe next year you will be seeing me. I want to meet you, Mike. Definitely want to meet you, Mike. I'm just kidding, David. Of course I want to meet you, too. I'm just kidding about that, but hopefully next season you guys will actually meet me in person. I definitely want to do that. It's something that I really want to do. It's just it's for many reasons why I can't come over. I want to come over. It's not a want. It's a timing thing with again when you have families. It's always a timing thing, and the timing just hasn't been right. I was there 2 years ago. The timing just hasn't been right yet again, but it will be soon, hopefully next season. All right, let's wrap up the show, guys. Great show. Great show. And, Mike, by the way, before we go, where did you go away on holiday?
Just popped over to Spain for a week, so an area I know well, and, yeah, it was a good week. Weather was nice. And
did you have good weather?
Just chilled for it. It was okay. I actually think it was better back in England, but it's a different kind of heat.
Okay. All right. All right. Fantastic. And David, as we know, you need a vacation too. So we've talked about that. I've had a vacation. Mike's had a vacation. I think it's time for you to have a holiday.
We'll see what happens in the election next week, because if it goes one way, Mike will be leaving the country. And if it goes the other way, I'll probably be leaving the country. So there
wow.
we are. Someone will be going.
Wow. I look forward to the election then. Interesting.
What was that, Mike? Sorry.
Fair politics.
All right, all right.
I'll be thrown out.
All right, politics to end the
out,
show.
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right, guys, let's wrap up the show. Before we go, just a reminder, you can download Cars Talk on iTunes and on the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. Also, you can listen to Cars Talk on the TuneIn app, which is available at most app stores for your mobile device. And I could tell you Cars Talk sounds great on the iPhone. I want to thank our guests on this episode, Full Manager Kit Simons and James Kent, for joining us. Well, that's it for this episode. For David and Mike, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys.
Cheers. Goodbye.
See you, Mike. See you, Russ. Speak soon.
Boys and girls, London calling. Now don't look down.